This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where I'm very, very pleased to have for the first hour a man who has been described as a hitman for the Clintons, meaning a political hitman. He was a main operative for Bill and Hillary Clinton. His name is Larry Nichols, and he's here to inform us about why, in his opinion, one of the leading candidates for the presidency of the United States is totally unqualified for that office. I think you're going to be pleased to say he occupied a whole host of important inside positions in Arkansas in the Governor Clinton administration. He knows the Clintons backward and forward. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jim.
I'm just delighted, Larry. Why don't you fill out my sketch about the positions you held? I know you were, you know, in the financial end of things in Arkansas. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, Tim, what I did from the very beginning with the Clintons, I was the man that first the kingmakers of Arkansas were Jack and Whit Stevens. People won't know who that was, but it matters not. They were the kingmakers, and they brought me in to handle this up-and-comer that they wanted to be governor. And of course, he was a young man named Bill Clinton. And they first asked me to meet Bill. I met him, and Bill was, I'll just tell you briefly about the meeting. The first meeting I had with him was he kept hustling the waitresses. He kept pinching on them, and I was trying to talk to him about running for governor. Every other word, he lied. So when I got through with that meeting, I told Mr. Witt and Mr. Jack that he was a sexual predator. He was a womanizer. He was a pathological liar. He was a habitual drug user. And they said, other than that, any problems? I said, I guess not. So everything was fine.
Other than that, I love it.
Yeah. Now, the next thing I had to do was meet Hillary. Now, folks, this is a true story. I remember it like it was yesterday. I had a meet and greet with the rich farmers from Northeast Arkansas. And we had this big buffet and this big spread. Well, Bill got there. The whole time I was trying to keep Bill in line. Well, he was running off with the waitresses. It was totally embarrassing. But Hillary didn't show up. 30 minutes late, she still hadn't shown up. 45 minutes late, she still hadn't shown up. But then, Jim, she made her entrance. When she came in, guys, I'm going to tell you just like I saw it. She came in, her hair was filthy. She did not like to bathe. She hated taking baths. She had hairy legs, hair under her arms. She had on a muumuu, if anybody remembers what those were in the day. Big black horn rim glasses. She had flip-flops on. That was bad. And she smelled hideous. That was bad. But around her neck, Jim, she had a necklace. It was a looked like a dog tag chain of the day. But she had a big card on the dog tag, and it was looked like you'd imagine seeing a press pass. It's a little bit smaller. When I got up close, around her neck, she had a card that said she was a proud member of the United States Communist Party. Now, folks, This really, I promise you, this was in the mid-70s in Deep South in Arkansas. When I saw that, I nearly fell over, and I said, Miss Clinton, well, she didn't want to go by Miss Clinton. She would not take his name. They were married. She was Hillary Rodham. She was not Clinton. So I screwed up, said, Miss Clinton, don't call me Miss Clinton. I'm Rodham. Okay, Miss Rodham, would you please, you don't really need to be wearing that. And then Jim, she shouted out, Bill, and she said the F-bomb. Get this off, you know, get this thing away from me.
Meaning you.
Now, guys, meaning me. Yes. Now, guys, I'm going to tell you, this is the Deep South, mid-70s. And to be honest, she was the first woman I ever heard use the F word out loud in public. She was the first woman. The room got deathly quiet. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. I turned around. I started trying to find Bill. Well, Bill was in the ladies' restroom with one of the waitresses. We had to get him out of there. She screamed it out louder the second time. When she screamed it the second time, you could have heard a feather drop. And guys, that was Hillary Rodham Clinton. That's the one I met. That's the one I worked with year after year after year. She always hated me. She hated me from that day forward. But I had to design a program. I had to design a plan to get this couple elected to office. And then, unfortunately, I became their handlers. I had to handle them for four of their five terms as governor. Now, where I ended up with the title political hitman. What we developed was a system. If anybody was about to come and tell something on Bill, Bill was bad about hitting on women. He was bad about basically assaulting women. I mean, I'm not kidding you guys. It was horrible. But when he did, then it was my job to go in, and if somebody was about to start talking or to tell it, then I would go in. Hillary would send me in. Hillary did. She would send me in. I'd have to dig up dirt on that person. And if they had something they needed to hide, it was my job to find it out, then bring it out and destroy them. If they didn't have anything that they had done that would destroy them, then we would make it up. But we controlled the media in Arkansas. We controlled everything in Arkansas. And that's how we got them into power. And unfortunately, back in that day, we designed it. Bill wanted a plan. We called it the 86 plan. This was me, Dick Morris, Paul Begala. Carville was in on it towards the end. We developed this plan to make Bill Clinton president. Now, I know that was crazy because we never dreamed, Jim, I never dreamed this guy could ever even get near the presidency because, I mean, the womanizer stuff is going to come out. We knew it. We knew it. We had to happen. So we did. We developed this thing, and it's called the 86 plan. Now, in this plan, the reason I tell you all about it is Bill would run, and he would get elected. He would serve for two terms. Then, when he was finished with his second term, they would wait a term, a four-year period, and then Hillary would run. And then when Hillary ran, she would serve two terms, and then she would trigger the thing called the FEMA provisional government. But now here's the part you need to know about Hillary. If she gets elected president, within 6 months, she will make Bill Clinton the ambassador to the UN. Within 6 months of that, because of what they've done through the Clinton Foundation with the UN, he will be made the Secretary General of the UN. And at that point, you will have Hillary, President of the United States, and Bill, Secretary General of the UN. And they will achieve what they set out to achieve all the way back to the first day I met them, to be the most powerful couple in the history of the world.
Well, Larry, let me ask.
That's what we're facing.
Let me interject a couple of questions. You know, when I heard that Bill had gone to Oxford, and I presumed he was therefore a Rhodes Scholar, I never, ever heard a whisper about him having been given the boot because he sexually assaulted another student. How was that kept under wraps?
Well, it was easy. It was easy then, and it's easy now. And it was handled simply this way, Jim. Who are you going to call? Who could you get that story out with back in Arkansas in that day? We controlled all the media. And if the media dared to do a story about Bill, well, then the Stevens, who controlled car dealers, banks, you name it, they just cut the advertising off from that media source until it choked it down. So we didn't have to worry about it. Let me ask you this. Hillary, today, if you caught her today taking a gun and shooting somebody right downtown Washington, right in the face, right on camera, who are you going to call, the prosecutor? Who would you call?
Well, I call the police.
See, that's the problem.
I understand what you're saying. You're implying she's untouchable.
Yeah. You see, when Bill went in, he did something that no president had really ever done before. Nixon tried, but was not successful. By appointing the attorney general the way Bill did, and by firing the first day he was in office as president, he fired every federal prosecutor in the country, every one of them. And he put in his people. And that's exactly what Hillary's doing. All of the federal prosecutors, the people you would have.
Larry, let's back up. You're telling me when Bill Clinton became president, he didn't just do a pro forma where they submit their resignations and then they're routinely reappointed. He actually fired them and appoint partisans of Bill Clinton.
Fired every one of them. Fired them. As a matter of fact, there were two or three that actually, you know, tried to resist and it got nowhere.
That's rather outrageous as a subversion of the judicial system and its administration. I mean, one presumes they're qualified and competent federal prosecutors to simply wholesale dismiss. How would you have any assurance that the replacements would be equal to the task? Or I think, of course, the obvious implication is he was deliberately replacing them so he'd have partisans of Bill Clinton in office.
That's right. Hillary was in charge of handpicking every replacement federal prosecutor. They had to pass the Clinton-Hillary test before they were put in.
And how many are we talking about? 100, 150?
There's 100. I think it was like 111 or 100 and some odd, however many there were. He got rid of all of them. Then they pulled a cute trick. Webb Hubble was who they wanted to be the attorney general. But they knew I had so much stuff on Hubble that he could never get passed by the Senate. He would never be approved. Mm-hmm. So you know what they did? They made him number three with no number one and no number two, and he was acting attorney general until they would pick the actual attorney general. And they just didn't pick an attorney general. Their attorney general.
Since you bring up Webster Hubble, I take it's not a secret in Arkansas or anywhere else that he's the actual father of Chelsea Clinton.
I'm the one that broke that story years ago, and people didn't believe me. It's funny. The National Enquirer called me about 6-7 months ago. They were back on the story. They went back and found it. And what they did is they actually went around, and they actually got a glass that Chelsea had drank out of, and they got something Bill had done. They literally checked the DNA. And guess what? It was like nine. They didn't get Hubble's DNA. They did not get a sample of it, but they had Bill and Chelsea's, and it was like a 9 million to 1 that he could not be her father. No way.
Yeah. 9 million to 1 against his Bill. Being her father. It was, you know,
the
only
right.
chance at 9 million that Bill could have been the father of this child, given the differences in the alleles and so forth.
Yep. So.
But you just look physically. Larry, you just look physically at Chelsea. She's had a little work done, but you just look at Chelsea. She's just a spitting image of Webster Hubble.
That's right. Look at those lips. It's a dead giveaway. And when I first broke the story about Hubble being Chelsea's father, they put out a memo, and Hubble and Chelsea were never to be on the stage together where a picture could be taken.
Well, that's ridiculous. You could take a picture of Hubble and a picture of Chelsea and put them together. I mean, that's
yeah. Then,
that's just,
you know, so I was the
one. Go ahead.
I'm sorry? Well, then I was the one. The only way you can get at Bill, and the only way you're going to get at Hillary, is you've got to fight their people that they put in position that you got to go through. Well, I'm the one. You can go back and check the history books, folks. I'm the one that brought out the stuff on Whitewater that got Hubble put in prison. And then when I got him put in prison, that's when they ended up having to appoint Janet Reno to be the AG. I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I got a question about Reno. Go ahead.
Well, she was another one of Hillary's dyke buddies. You see, Hillary is AC/DC.
Right.
Hillary actually prefers women.
Bill once actually said that Hillary had more than he had had. I mean, he was using
that right.
phrase that I'm hesitating here. Talking about
over
the form of sexual activity that she'd had more than he'd had, which is a rather stunning remark.
Indeed. Now, folks, I tell you all of this. It sounds funny, but here's reality, Jim. Hillary is in position to be the next president of the United States. To sum up Hillary so that everybody can know her like I know her, it goes back to the hearing on Benghazi. Folks, I tell you to go back and watch that. When you see Hillary say, "What difference does it make? They're dead." The coldness in which she said that.
What was she referring to?
That's Hillary.
Benghazi?
Yes, the ambassador and the three guards that were killed in Benghazi. When she was in that hearing being questioned about it, she finally had enough and just threw her hands up and said, "What difference does it make? They're dead."
That's pretty bad.
Well, that's Hillary.
Well,
I'm sorry?
Let me ask you a follow-up about Benghazi. My understanding is the ambassador, Chris Stevens, was trying to retrieve the shoulder-mounted missiles. I don't know if they were Stingers, but I presume they were, that had been given to the rebels, that he wanted to retrieve them back, and that Hillary didn't want them to be retrieved, and that's what led to this mess. Is that wrong?
As I understand, I don't think you're wrong. Now, I got it from a friend of mine who is Benjamin Netanyahu. He was upset because he had found out that we were giving these high-tech shoulder-fire missiles to the Al-Qaeda in Libya, literally providing them with these weapons. And, of course, these shoulder-fire weapons, they're not like an RPG. These things could knock our helicopters out of the sky easy.
Oh, sure.
We were giving them to Al-Qaeda.
And
when he found out about that, and he went and they demanded that they be stopped and that they try to retrieve them. And that's when the ambassador was trying to get her to cooperate, and she refused to do so. And let's not forget, guys, when that attack was going on and they were watching it in the war room there in the White House, at 10 o'clock, she left and went home. She got bored with it.
She had more important things to do than manage the crisis in Benghazi.
Absolutely.
One of the most traumatic events in American history occurred during the administration of Janet Reno as Attorney General, which was the Waco catastrophe. And whatever we have heard about it, that was induced by the federal authorities there. There are aerial shots.
Yes.
I've seen the automatic fire coming from the federal authorities into the building. I've seen a tank run up to the building and deliberately set it on fire. Those Waco people were all innocent victims, and there were in excess of 80 of them, I think maybe 120, and a whole lot of children. Now, my understanding is that Hillary had a role in taking out the compound at Waco.
Hillary was trying, there was a movement abreast at the time to bring all of the agencies under the head of one department. They wanted the ATF, the DEA, the FBI. They wanted, instead of having all the different agencies, they wanted them under one. And that was what the people with the ATF were trying to avoid. As it turned out, because of who I am, because of the publicity I had from fighting the Clintons, there was a guy that actually lived in Mayflower, which is just a few miles from my home, and he was a photographer. And the ATF had actually hired him prior to the raid. They hired him to come, and they put him into the field around the building. He and several other photographers to get this operation on video. What they did not expect these guys to get was exactly what you saw. The helicopter flying over with a machine gun in it, firing into the compound. And to this day, they still deny that when there's video proof of it.
I was talking about shots from the helicopter downward where you could see the federal authorities using automatic weapons to fire into the compound.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, do you know who was in the helicopter that was flying around? And remember, you got a little thing in America called the posse comitatus, which means, you know, the military cannot be used. Well,
to
it
perform,
just so happened.
To perform
that
police
general,
functions.
Right. Well, it just so happened that Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark, headed up the military operation. Now, Wesley Clark, for everybody, when we were in Bosnia, he was over the UN command. But do you know how Wesley Clark got his general star, his first one? We had a guy in Arkansas that was a general in the Guard. He had died, and so his wife, we had to go and get her to give up his position so that Clark could get it. And then Bill Clinton gave him his first star in the Arkansas National Guard. And then, of course, once he got that, then he rose up and became their point man in the military. And let's not forget, when Bill got elected president, remember what happened. Hillary refused to let the Marine guards at the White House walk into the White House in their uniforms.
Repeat that. She wouldn't allow military to walk into the White House in uniform?
Right. In uniform. She would not allow the Marine guards to walk in to the White House in their uniforms.
You're telling me Hillary has such a deep and abiding disdain for the military forces of the United States, she would not even allow the Marine Corps officers and enlisted non-commissioned officers assigned to the White House detail to enter the White House in uniform?
You got it. That is absolute.
Listen, Larry, we've got the 30-second clip of Hillary expressing her lack of concern for those in Benghazi. So we're going to play it now. You and I will barely be able to hear it, but it'll be real clear when this is broadcast.
We were misled that there was supposedly protests, and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But,
and the American
people
could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
Thank you for finding that chance, Larry. You could hear us say, what difference does it make? They're dead. But we want to know why they died and what we can do about it and how to guard against it happening again. That's a bit of a cavalier attitude.
It is, but that's the Clintons. That's Hillary. Listen, when Hillary gets to be president, she will turn us into a communist society. She will be dictator in chief. You think Obama's bad, and he is. He's nothing compared to Hillary. Nothing.
Tell me a bit about the vision, what you're talking about when you say a communist society. Tell me what that would mean, Larry. What would she do that would be different and worse?
Hillary believes that there should be a ruling class, which she always told me my job was to make them the new Camelot. That was my job. My job was to make them the ruling class. But she wanted one thing different than most others. She wanted to use their money to get in a position of power. But then she wanted to be in a position where she didn't have to listen to anyone. And she believed that the government should be run in a communist type structure. She believes that there should be a central committee of just a small handful of people, and they all answer to her.
You're telling me...
And that's the way it's going to be.
You're telling me that even if she took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic, she would nevertheless be the greatest enemy, the arch enemy, if you will, of the Constitution of the United States.
There's no doubt. No doubt. Now, you know, look at the dilemma we're in. You've got Obama. Obama wants us to become a caliphate for Islam. I don't care what anybody says. You know, look around, say what you want, but Obama is a Muslim. And he wants us to be a caliphate under Islam. Now, his competitor, oddly enough, is Hillary. Hillary wants us to become a communist dictatorship. See, that was her little twist. She wanted to be a communist country, but she wanted to add the dictatorship part of it. She wants a central committee, but they all answer to her. And if you worry about her taking an oath swearing allegiance to the Constitution, Jim, I ask you simply to look at everything Hillary says. Tell me she bothers to worry about lying. She doesn't worry about lying. She doesn't worry about getting caught. Not at all.
Larry, let me ask you this. You mentioned it in passing. I want to come back to it. You said that Hillary would trigger off the FEMA plan. Tell me about that.
I spent 2 years with the FEMA provisional government plan. What that is in case of a national crisis, once a national crisis is declared, then technically what happens is the president becomes king. The government is set aside. So the structure is the president becomes king. there is no vice president. The number two is the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. All members of Congress and the Senate, of the House and the Senate, they're sent back to their home state and district, and they become the federal government for their district. It's basically a 16th century European type government.
Or the imposition of a military government, a nonviolent coup.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's really the imposition
called the Velvet Coup.
The Velvet Coup, yeah. Because you got a military command structure from the commander-in-chief all the way down.
That's right. That's exactly it. And that's what all of them are trying to achieve. That's what Obama wants. That's why, believe it or not, Jim, the thing that I have that makes Bill and Bill Clinton told ABC, an ABC reporter, that, you know, an ABC reporter asked Bill Clinton at a party a couple, 3 or 4 months ago, come on and tell us who are the three people Hillary worries about most to keep her from being president. He said, that's easy. Larry Nichols, and not necessarily in that order. Now, folks, if you doubt me, you need to look at Bill Clinton's own memoirs. He wrote about me in his memoirs. He didn't write good, Jim, but the fact that he didn't write good is good. I mean, if he wrote bad about me, that's good, because I was the one that broke out of the 38 major scandals. 37 of them came from me. Wow. I'm the one that's most credited for getting him impeached. You know, everything from Jennifer Flowers to Paula Jones to Whitewater, all the way through Vince Foster, all of that up to and including Monica Lewinsky, that was all me. Well, I had to bring it out. I had to fight to get it out.
Tell me about Monica. How did Monica get in that position in the first place? Was she a honeypot? Was she working for the Israelis? Or was this an elaborate endeavor to ensnare Bill Clinton into a scandal he could not control?
Oh, Lord, no. No, she was just a pretty face running around. That's all she was, just a pretty face. Bill moved in on her, had him a little thing going. What people don't realize is Hillary, you know, although Hillary was the one denying it and all that, Hillary was the one that manipulated and did everything she could to get her away from Bill. She was the one that kept pushing her away. But you see, people don't realize how I got the Lewinsky story broken. It was a part of Paula Jones. I kept telling Paula's attorneys, if we can get Bill under oath, he's a pathological liar. I will make him lie. Now, I knew about Lewinsky from a lady named Linda Tripp. Linda Tripp, I knew because I was the one working on the case of the death of Vince Foster. Linda Tripp was Vince Foster's secretary. She was the last one to see him alive. Well, just as a function of that.
That's a bombshell to me, Larry, that Linda Tripp was Vince Foster's secretary. That's stunning.
Jim, there is no way in 1 hour. I would hope that you and I have a relationship, because this will take several programs to give you the whole story of how all of this intertwines. And it does all intertwine. Linda Tripp, she was Vince Foster's secretary. She was the one that got him his hamburger and french fries that he ate before he went and supposedly killed himself. But it turns out, in talking to her, that's how I found out about this lowly little peon named Monica Lewinsky. And that's how I found out about the blue dress. I'm the one that had to get the blue dress from the cleaners.
Before they cleaned it.
They had the stain on it.
Before they cleaned it.
Yes.
Now was Hillary having a relationship with Vince Foster? That's certainly the impression I have.
Oh, you bet. Well, that was the whole key to the Foster investigation, and I assure you, as soon as I know that Bill and Hillary have stopped Obama from being able to use the FEMA provisional government plan. Once they have stopped him and Hillary gets the nomination and she gets in the general election, I assure you, Jim, I will stop Hillary from being president, and it will be, I'm not afraid to say it, it will be over, believe it or not, the death of Vince Foster. There are things that I can prove beyond any shadow of any doubt. Now, they moved his body. I don't know who killed him or if he killed himself. All right, let's make that clear. I'm not saying somebody killed him. I'm not saying he killed himself. I do not know.
You're not even likely to have a hamburger and french fries if you're planning to kill yourself. I got to tell you.
I would think that, but he was so happy that he had a french fry and hamburger on his way to kill himself. But I'll tell you something else. Supposedly, as the official story goes, he walked 200 yards down a dirt trail in the hot summer and didn't get a microscopic speck of dust on his pants, his socks, his shoes. Now, how do you do that?
Well, it ain't possible. It ain't possible, Larry. I mean, obviously, the body had been moved. I've actually done a show about Vince Foster
All right. The key is they moved the body. Now, why? Why did they move the body? And the answer is because if they had of left him wherever he died, he would have fallen under the, and I know the house he was in, he would have fallen under the D.C. police, Washington, D.C. police. And had he have fallen under them, they would have certainly looked into the mitigating circumstances of his death, which would have been what? The 10-year affair with Hillary. If it had come out that Hillary was the first lady to ever be caught having an affair, she would never be able to have run for president. So they had to get that.
But she and Bill are having affairs all the time. Whether they're in the White House or not doesn't seem to matter.
It doesn't matter to them, but in that day, had that have come out, they felt like that would have prohibited her from ever being able to run for the presidency herself.
Well, if you were the fixer, If you were the fixer, were you supposed to cover about how Vince Foster died?
Well, if I were then, which I wasn't, that would have been my job to cover it up.
Who succeeded?
And I've done a lot of that.
Who succeeded you in that role?
I have no idea. I think it was Betty Young.
A woman.
Betty Young went with them to the White House. Now, Betty was the head of his state police security. And I think he went with them to Washington. I think he did a lot of the fixing in that day. But, you know, I've got statements from the Secret Service how they were frustrated having to get Bill Clinton cocaine. You know, if the president, that put them in a bind. If the president was going to do cocaine, they had to facilitate it and make sure it was safe. They hated it. They hated Hillary.
They had to test Bill's coke before he snorted it?
Yep. Sure did. And let me tell you a story that from the Secret Service, they hated Hillary because she treated them horribly. But that's the way she treated everybody. But there was a situation where the Secret Service is standing outside of the residence of the President and First Lady in the White House. And when they go in there, the Secret Service are never to go in. Well, this particular occasion, they heard screaming and shouting and yelling. When they were standing at the door, they didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, they heard things breaking and crashing. And so they had no choice, but they ran in. When they got in, guess what they found? They found, remember the show Night Court on TV? The blonde little prosecutor lady that was Marcy Post. Bond, they break in, they go into the president's living quarters, and they go in, and there's Hillary and Marky Post in bed together, and Bill had pulled up a chair and wanted to watch, and Hillary was throwing stuff at him, trying to make him get out and leave him alone.
That was the cause of all of this. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Larry.
So, but see,
I hope you have some security yourself, Larry, because the Clintons aren't very happy with you, and they'll be even less happy after this is broadcast.
No, they don't like me at all. And imagine being me, Jim. I'm the one man standing between Hillary and something she's wanted since she was 4 years old. It isn't a very good seat to be in. Now, by the way, if I may, I hate to do this, but I've got to do it. If people want to help, may I give them a way to help you?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, I have nothing, guys. I have nothing. It's me by myself. I'm going to give my phone number out. People can call me. But if you want to help me, you go to PayPal. And at PayPal, it's nicholslive@aol.com. nicholslive@aol.com. And anything anyone can send would be much appreciated.
It's just Nichols Live, L-I-V-E? One word, or is there something?
No, it's all one word. Nichols Live, NICHOLSLIVE, @AOL.com, which is also my email address, but that's my PayPal. Now, I'll tell you something else that I work with. I work with a group. You see, YouTube, folks don't realize this, Jim, but YouTube is starting to yank conservative videos off the air. And what they've got it set up now is if you put out any moral Christian conservative video, they'll yank it off. So there is a group that is putting up an alternative to YouTube. And folks, I'm in support of this program very much so. And you just simply go to GoFundMe/LarryNichols.com. Now, that's not me. I'm in support of the group, but please help that group because we've got to get it up because they're working hard, Jim. And by the way, they're working hard to make sure your kind of program gets yanked off the air. You know that.
Yep. I do, Larry. And in fact, Amazon banned my book about Sandy Hook because it blew apart the whole thing as an elaborate hoax with 13 contributors, including 6 PhD college professors, current or retired, blew it all apart. The school had been closed by 2008. There were no children there. The whole thing was a scam to promote gun control, Larry. This will probably come as no surprise to you, but the government is staging with crisis actors, meaning actors who are called to play roles as though it were a crisis all over the country. In San Bernardino, Larry, we even found the Craigslist advertisement for the extras for the San Bernardino shooting. Good pay, they said. They would get busing, they'd get food, but they'd have to sign a waiver under penalty of perjury that they'd never talk about their role in faking it.
Good Lord. Well, see, the problem is, Jim, we've gotten to a place where we as a nation, we as a people, we've become so lax that Washington has burned completely out of control. Now the media is totally leveraged. You're not going to get anything out that they don't want out. You're not going to get the government to pursue anything. Look at Loretta Lynch. You know, she's out saying that anybody talking bad about Islam, she's going to investigate and she will prosecute. Well, Loretta Lynch, Miss Attorney General, prosecute me. I don't like Muslims. Muslims, there's no such thing as a tame Muslim. What? So come get me.
Well, simply bizarre, Larry, because they have blamed Muslims for so many events like, San Bernardino, of course, but also 9/11, Charlie Hebdo, the Paris attack. I mean, Muslims, we've been told Muslims are bad. So how can we suddenly change our attitude and say, oh, Muslims, after attacking us on 9/11, San Bernardino, Charlie Hebdo, and Paris, now Muslims are good and we're supposed to welcome them with open arms?
That's right. He's bringing in 10,000 refugees from Syria. Now, here's the trick part. 20% of that 10,000 are women and children. The rest are young men, which are the age of the radicals. Now, figure this out. CARE, the Muslim organization in America, they put out that out of all Muslims, 25% of every group of Muslims, 25% are what they call radical Muslims, potential jihadists, 25%. So Obama's bringing in 10,000, so he's fixing to put 2,500 jihadists potentially on the ground in this country. They can't vet them. I mean, it's bizarre. Jim, this whole thing is nuts. I mean, everything's nuts.
I can't understand how Trump has been pilloried for a perfectly reasonable proposal that we should have a temporary suspension of persons entering the country from the Middle East. Now, the fact that he said instead of Muslim and instead of saying the Middle East has caused the great controversy. But we've been given so much reason to demonize Muslims that it's a totally reasonable response. And I think he's going to support it.
Of course. And then Hillary comes out and pulls the same trick she did with the Benghazi thing and said, you know, Trump's videos are being used as propaganda tools, recruiting tools for Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
And several organizations have investigated, Larry, and found there's no basis for that whatsoever. But Hillary is not going to apologize. That was such an obvious smear. That is truly unworthy of a candidate for the presidency of the United States.
But don't you see, Jim, nobody will do anything about it. That's the thing that people have to understand. There's no place. We have no one to call. No one. You know, people think Fox News is this conservative, you know, media. No, it's not. Fox News is just as controlled as MSNBC, NBC, and all the rest. One of the biggest contributors to Hillary is Rupert Murdoch. My God, it's just a scam. It's just a game they play. Washington's gone, Jim. That's why I pushed states' rights. You know, I did a video. It's called States' Rights. And what it says is, any state can say no to all of this. Washington has no power. It has no power except that which the states accede to it. A state can say no to any of it. And you know what? Federal government can't do a thing about it, and I can prove it. You ever heard of Colorado?
Sure.
Colorado wanted to legalize marijuana.
Sure, of course.
There's a federal law against it. Well, guess what? They couldn't stop Colorado, could they? They can't stop a state from doing anything.
It ought to be done all over the country. I mean, those laws, just because a gentleman prefers to smoke its pie rather than drink it, are simply absurd. They turn ordinary Americans into criminals. They take them out of the workforce, put them on the taxpayer back because they have to pay for their incarceration for an innocuous crime that had no victim.
Absolutely. And then they turn around and they open up the borders and tell us they're trying to close the border down and stop, you know, all the Mexicans from coming up and taking Americans' jobs. Hey, all you got to do is fix it to where when a Mexican comes in, he can't get a job by prosecuting the employer and then prosecute the person that rents them a place to live. And you know what? They'll leave. You don't have to build a wall. You don't have to do any magical million-dollar stuff. But the problem is, that's a large voting group. And I'm telling you, everybody better hear me on this. This, if we have this election, if Obama does not trigger the FEMA, which sets aside the election, if he doesn't do it, then here's what's going to happen. This election in 2016 will be the last election we have. Now, I'm not saying there won't be another election. You know, Cuba and Russia have elections to make you think you're having an election. But it'll all be rigged because they're talking about 30 to 50 million Mexicans that are going to be allowed to vote.
Well, I think
that's what that'll do.
I think they're using electronic voting machines to steal elections already, Larry. So, you know, we give them this, We're given the impression that we're voting, but we aren't. Here in Wisconsin, for example, this Governor Scott Walker, in order to burnish his credentials to run for president, should have been handily defeated by a very good Democratic candidate, a woman by the name of Mary Burke. She had Michelle Obama in twice, Barack Obama, even Bill Clinton. We had an historic election which traditionally favors Democrats, and yet Walker won by 53-47%, precisely what I had anticipated would be the winning margin for Mary Burke. I solicited the assistance of a statistician who's brilliant and who's published on the theft of elections before. And he determined that, in fact, the election had been stolen through the use of electronic voting machines going through district after district to demonstrate in Milwaukee County, for example, Larry, which is a bastion of Democratic support. The greater the number of votes that were cast, the greater the percentage that went to Walker.
Oh, yeah. Look, Jim, you're talking to somebody. Ain't nobody rigged more elections than I have. I've rigged more voting machines. Don't worry, buddy. If you want to talk to the master of sleaze, that's me.
Isn't it so trivial? People don't understand how easy it is to do this. I had a friend who's a very smart guy who had a degree in mathematics from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he could not understand that this was obviously a rigged election. Walker can't get that kind of support. He's never had that kind of support in the state, so far as I can determine.
No.
But it was just flipping, you know, the votes. Go ahead.
Well, and everybody thought when we went to this computer voting machine that it would eliminate tricking elections or rigging the elections. Folks, that made it easier.
Of course.
It made it easier because, you know, all they do is you trigger it so that, for example, in your voting precinct, let's say you've got a sheriff that will get every vote in the precinct. I mean, he's loved by everybody. All they do is fix the machine and fix the computer so that a vote cast for that person is a vote cast for Clinton. It's simple. It's easy done, and it's
It's even simpler, Larry. All you do is have the votes cast for the, you know, if the candidate who's going to win, according to the polls, isn't your candidate, just having the votes cast for the opposition count for your candidate, those for him count for your opponent. That appears to be what they did in Wisconsin, because he won by the very margin by which Mary Burke ought to have prevailed.
There you go. That's right. I mean, look, guys, the elections are rigged. But what people don't realize, do you know who it is that validates the election, the voting machines? It's the Democrat or the Republican Party in each state. Whichever one won the last election, they are in control of inspecting all the machines for the next election. There's no independent group. So you figure it out.
Larry,
it's all rigged.
Yes. But I have felt it was rigged by and large to favor Republicans because it's the GOP that owns most of these machines. Hey, the guy who owned the voting machines in Ohio in 2004 declared he was going to do everything he could to make sure Bush and Cheney were reelected. In that case, they were actually sending the raw votes down to a basement operation in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where Karl Rove was massaging the numbers and sending them back to Kent Blackwell,
the
Secretary of State, who was also the co-chairman of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, to release them.
And you ought to look at who's on the board of DAPO. Look at who's on the board of DAPO, and you can figure out who's going to win the election. I'm telling you, look, we've got to get back to doing it the way our founding fathers set it up. At the state level, Washington is rigged. It's rigged from top to bottom. And as you see in Wisconsin, it's even moving into the states. It's actually in the states. We rigged it in Arkansas forever.
I think
people have a chance of controlling it at the state level. You don't at Washington's level.
As I believe Vint Foster case illustrates, the Clintons haven't been hesitant about having people taken out. Would you agree?
I can only say this. I had 52 people that were going to testify in various cases against the Clintons that ended up dying mysterious deaths. We called them Arkansides because it was so crazy. I mean, one guy, this is the truth, he was fixing to testify about documents in Whitewater, and he ended up cutting his hands, his feet off, his head down to his neck to the brain stem, set himself on fire, and threw himself in a dump, and it was ruled a suicide.
That's quite a feat. That's quite a feat.
That reminds me of the cultural
inspector Henry Marshall, who was coming out to investigate whether Billy Saul Estes had the cotton allotments that were collateral for huge loans from the Department of Agriculture, found shot 5 times with a single-shot bolt-action rifle, carbon monoxide in his lungs. He'd been rendered unconscious by a blow to the head, and the local justice of the police declared that, too, to be a suicide.
That's right. So, I mean, yeah. People die like, and look, you know that former chef for the Clintons that went on the hiking trip in New Mexico and then ended up drowned? Well, I get a call from the FBI. This guy was the chef during Clinton's term as president. He goes on a hike with his girlfriend. He disappears for 2 days. They found him. He drowned in the river. The FBI calls me and they go, do you know the reason this man, the only thing he had on his body or his person was a sheet of paper that had my name and phone number on it? They asked me, do you know why he did that or why he had that? I said, man, I got no idea. Man, how do you think that makes me feel?
Well, you mean you think that was to send you a message that you might be next?
I guess he, I can only assume he was trying to get hold of me to tell me some information. I would surmise, I would guess.
Larry, we don't
I'd
want
hate
another,
to think that it was what you said.
Larry, we don't want another Arkansas. I want you to take extra precautions. I want to have you back on the air, Larry, but we know that can only be if something unusual doesn't happen to you between now and then. I can't thank you enough. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my guest this hour, Larry Nichols, for coming here. Go to his site, NicholsLive@AOL.com, if you have a few extra bucks to help Larry get through the rest of his life, do it. And we hope that is not going to be abbreviated by conversations like this one with me. Stand by for a review of the events of the year during the second half of The Real Deal.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio. Turn off your television sets. Turn them off, pal. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
My name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
2015 is coming to a close, and we have the brilliant Dr. James Fetzer on, who's going to talk to us about what 2015 meant and what happened during it, a year of divisiveness within the truth movement, a year of religious extremism, and a year of false flag religious extremism. Dr. James Fetzer is the brightest and most integrous person in the truth movement, and I can say that because I've been in the truth movement longer than Dr. Fetzer. I've been in it longer than Alex Jones, longer than Jeff Rentz, longer than David Wilcock. I've been in it since I was a teenager and I shared the stage with the great William Cooper. Now what that means is I've spent a long time going all the way down all the rabbit holes and doing a lot of investigating, and the fact is this is not the end of the road for us. We are going to find solutions, and we're going to focus on solutions as best we can, but we cannot come up with solutions unless we at least identify the problem. And for that, we need researchers, and we need bravery, and we need the kind of people in this world that teach us as effectively as our guest today, Dr. James Fetzer. So roll the song, Don, if you've got it going. Do we have the song? We can do it. Yes, we can.
We can do it. Yes, we can. We can change things throughout the land.
I'm as mad as hell,
but we are
I'm not going to take this anymore.
Lend a hand. We can do it. Oh, yes, we can. Oh, your neighbor over there. A bit bewildered, but he cares. He just doesn't know what to do. Join together and then there'll be two. There are others all around, scattered throughout the town. Reach out and you will see your numbers swell to three. We can do it. Yes, we can. We can change things throughout the land. But we all must lend a hand. We can do it. Oh, yes, we can.
James Fetzer, and you're at TruthVersusNews.inc, the little homespun Seattle TV show that's apparently getting at least a little bit of attention around the world. We've had a lot of breaking news on this show and breaking insight, and we have the author of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, the book that was banned by Amazon and now is available free online. You can find that at Rents.com. Because of that ban, it's being distributed a lot more widely than it would have been, and thanks to Dr. Fetzer's brilliant move of putting it free on the web as soon as Amazon tried to ban it. So we have a lot to cover today. Welcome, Jim. It's great to have you again, as usual.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. I want to cover what I take to be the top 10 stories of the year, broken into segments, and invite your comments in relation to solutions about each.
Thank you.
The big story of the year, I believe, is the discovery that ISIS was made in the USA. We have, as this slide shows, a Defense Intelligence Agency document facilitating the rise of the Islamic State in order to isolate the Syrian regime that was unearthed by Judicial Watch on 18 May was a major development. There were many other indications, as the next slide shows, that something was afoot, where the Iraqi army, for example, downed two UK planes carrying weapons for ISIS. About a week later, as the next slide shows, Iraqi popular forces shot down a U.S. helicopter that was also providing supplies and weapons for ISIS.
Number those slides when you talk, Jim.
Yeah.
Say the number of them. Okay.
That was
three.
That was number four.
Okay, that was three. We're on four. Okay.
Number five reflects that we even have photographs of ISIS members sporting U.S. Army tattoos. There are quite a lot of that out there, remarkably enough. And in slide six, we have what was purloined, actually hacked out of an assistant to Senator John McCain, a video showing the beheading videos being staged on a studio in either Tel Aviv or Hollywood. Kevin, it's very distressing that the American government has been so hypocritical, lying to the American people, exaggerating the ISIS threat when the United States was responsible for creating ISIS. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I know. Kevin's on your false flag. I'm activist angel on this one. The evidence is just overwhelming. What's stopping it from getting out to most people? Is it really the mainstream media or the psychology of people not wanting to know?
Well, activists, I think that most Americans are in a state of cognitive dissonance where they want to suppress or deny information at odds with their core beliefs. And when the government has spent such a massive amount of time with propaganda suggesting ISIS is the greatest threat in world history, as it were, it's very difficult for the average American being bombarded by this kind of propaganda from all the major networks again and again and again to think clearly about it, particularly when they don't have the analytical research resources to go onto the net and do their own research. I'm hopeful that by programs like this, we can reach out to the public and enable them to better understand what's taking place.
Well, the research is extraordinary, just as it is in your book. So let's carry on and look at it some more.
Well, one of the earlier events during the year was the Charleston church shooting at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church on 17 June. As the next slide, number eight, shows, we had a suspect, Dylan Roof. Well, it's interesting that on the left you see his jacket with two apartheid nation patches, but those weren't on his jacket originally.
No.
Those were photoshopped. And there's a principle under the law that fraud vitiates everything. In other words, once you discover indications that a story is fraudulent, if we transfer it to the public domain, we're entitled to regard the entire story as fraudulent. Slide number nine shows another proof, because we have a 24-hour clock showing Dylan Roof purportedly entering the church at 0800. It appears, Angel, that whoever put it together didn't realize that that meant 8 a.m. rather than 8 p.m. And got it wrong. Here he's wearing a $1,000 bulletproof vest as he enters into the church. As slide 10 shows, moreover, this celebrated minister, Clementa Pinckney, was featured in an open casket memorial service, but it doesn't look at all like the pastor himself. This person has much too dark a complexion, much too thick a neck, and appears to be of Haitian origin. Remarkably, Angel, Hillary Clinton just happened to be in town that day and sent her personal photographer over to the church to take photographs. And yet Dylan is alleged to have loaded and reloaded four different times. The pews would have been all shot up, splintered, wood, blood all over the place, the altar a mess. And yet they conducted a normal church service within 48 hours. I'm sorry to say, Angel, that this is one more in a series of false flag attacks that have been staged by our own government to instill fear into different segments of our population, in this instance, to instill fear into blacks.
I think it was either Dr. Ewan or Vivian Lee in your book that talked about how they're almost thumbing our noses in it. And the thing that I found most fascinating about this ridiculous Charleston shooting was the hearing that was allegedly held, where Dylan Stormroof's 15-year-old brother got to dress up as a cop behind him, and the alleged judge stepped out and said, Charleston's a great city and terrible you've done this, and then allowed the alleged victims to tell Dylan Stormroof, without an attorney, how much they forgave him. What I'm wondering is, that was so absurd from a legal jurisprudence standpoint. Is it possible that they're literally setting themselves up to say, you know, if you believe this, what we threw out, then you're a bunch of idiots, just like whichever one in your book talked about?
Well, Angel, actually, the next story, which we see here in slide number 11, the Virginia TV shooting on 27 August, when we take a close look, in slide number 12, we see it being reported that a reporter and a photographer was shot to death on the air. Sounded very dramatic until you actually looked into the evidence, because as slide 13 shows, this was clearly a staged event. You have this 300-pound black guy walking up to them doing an interview on a wooden balcony. So you could hear his feet coming from the creaking of the wood. He waits until just the right moment, as though she weren't aware of his presence, then fires from virtually point-blank range, and there is no blood. She turns and runs off. And indeed, as the next slide shows, number 14, when you look at the area, the balcony from the air, you can see there's no blood there. This was another completely staged event. Nobody died here. And it turns out her father is an actor who's been an avid anti-gun proponent of long standing. It's embarrassing, Angel, that they're seeking to manipulate the public through these staged events.
Is there a goal of gun control? Well, that's what we think. But if it is it utterly backfiring because people are buying more guns, or are they just planning to take more away from more people? What do you think? Is it backfiring on them?
Yes, absolutely. It's backfiring because people can see the absurdity of it, which will become clear as we continue. The fact of the matter is that people need guns to defend themselves. It looks as though we may be on the verge of a war with Russia, in which case Washington and New York would be taken out immediately. Our government would collapse. If we did not have weapons, we'd be defenseless against marauding gangs who want to rape and loot and pillage. Even homeowners who have no weapons are defenseless against those who would break into their homes. It takes 20 minutes for the police on the average to respond to a call. But the carnage typically takes place in the first five, when your daughter could be raped, your wife could be mugged, you could be killed. So it's terribly important, and some law enforcement officials are now encouraging that citizens should be armed to protect themselves because of considerations like those I'm outlining here.
It's the end of 2015 and headed toward 2016, and anybody in this movement with a brain like we have is recognizing that things seem to be coming to some sort of a head, that we're in for a very interesting year coming up. And I think it was Vivian Lee that said that they're actually making these false flag things so stupid as a demonstration of their power. It's a power trip. What do we do to the people that we know, that we show this to, that say, I don't want to see that. It's too much for me. What can we say?
Kevin, they are free to pursue their own pursuits, but they're sleepwalking through history. They have no idea what's going on around them. Just as the Umpqua College shooting on 1 October, which is the headline in slide number 15, demonstrated. Once again, as we see in slide 16, there was a lot of coverage. Oregon shooting at Umpqua College kills 10, sheriff said. According to the official account, and we see in slide number 17, we had a group of first responders who, knowing they were going to be on television, put on a T-shirt for their cause of the week, which in this case was Breast Cancer Awareness Week. You have no surge of ambulances. I mean, this is not displaying any urgency. Someone is lying on one of these portable, but there's no signs that anyone was actually killed. We're told officially that the shooter asked each student what their religion was, and if they said they were Christian, they were shot in the head. Well, this is another contrived event to, in this instance, instill fear into another segment of the population, namely Christians. And just as there are a lot of blacks in America, there are a lot of Christians. But as the next slide shows, this is number 18. Bottled water is a sure sign. We had bottled water all over the place. We had bottled water at Sandy Hook in the firehouse and boxes of pizza. We have bottled water here. That's a sure sign. What we're talking about is a drill, one more drill. Now, in this case, it's very interesting that the sheriff who is investigating the Oregon massacre published a Sandy Hook truther video suggesting that he was skeptical about it, as we see on slide 19. And on slide 20, there was a very, very good article.
Nice.
13 troubling signs of potentially yet another false flag. Let me mention just a few before inviting your comments once again. On slide number 21, grandiose mainstream media headline demanding your attention to this story. Immediate call for gun control in the story headline. Obama himself immediately calls for gun control, seizing the moment, Sandy Hook style. And in slide 22, a few others. Initial images and videos show no ambulances, no blood, no dead bodies. The shooting has a divisive religious twist to it, opens a door for blaming Muslim and others later on. Angel, this was just another really poorly executed fake staged attack. Embarrassing on the whole.
As an actor and a director myself, I keep thinking about my poor fellow crisis actors, and I know we uncovered in the most recent San Bernardino shooting the Craigslist advertisement offering the acting jobs to the participants and saying they would have to sign a waiver. My question for you, Dr. Fetzer, is, do you have any insight or information, either one, as to whether or not my poor fellow actors know ahead of time that they're going to be in on a total national scam, or whether they think they're in a drill that they then are put into a little room and said, okay, we're going live with this one, and you're all just as guilty as we are, if not. Do you any information on that for my poor actors out there?
Angel, there have been so many of these, and they've been so widely covered, especially in the alternative media. Unless we're dealing with zombies, this has to be a conscious, willing suspension of disbelief. In other words, they are willing to allow themselves to be cast as actors in these, regardless of the consequences. They're being paid for it. They're being given meals. In this stage of the economy in the United States, they're probably grateful for the work, but I'm sorry to say they have to have at least a lingering suspicion that they're playing a role in an elaborate charade intended to deceive the American people.
I'm not seeing lingering suspicions amongst anybody, least of all my fellow performers. I wish I were. I wish everybody had those lingering suspicions. Thank you for that. Let's keep going.
Well, let's turn to slide number 23, which identifies the second biggest story of the year, to wit that the book Nobody Died at Sandy Hook was published by Amazon on 22 October, but it did so very well, having sold nearly 500 copies by the 19th of November when it was banned by Amazon. On that same day, I released it as a PDF to the public for free. Kevin, Angel, I dare say, it's going to turn out this case will be studied by journalism classes in the future because it was a colossal blunder to ban the book. We might have sold 4,000 or 8,000 copies of the book, but now it's being downloaded and read by millions. If you look at the next slide, number 24, it turns out Amazon had 20 books on Sandy Hook, but only one of them drew conclusions that disagreed with the government, and that, of course, was the book that was banned. It had many five-star ratings from those who'd actually read the book, one-star readings from those who had not. But there are 13 contributors to the book, Angel, and they include six PhD, current or retired college professors, where the evidence we produce is simply overwhelmingly compelling. Look, for example, in slide number 25. We have a photograph from the Nancy Lanza bedroom suite where Adam is supposed to have shot his mother to death lying on the bed. There's some red stuff there, but it's clearly not blood. It's not in copious quantity. I suspect it might be raspberry jam. There are some white papers on the wooden chest, which we find in many other photographs because they were keeping records of precisely how they were furnishing each room of the house to serve as a prop. And notice beneath the left leg of the bed, in their haste, they forgot to remove a blue moving pad. In the case of the refurbishing of the school, in Chapter 8, we have yet another 50 photographs, among which this is by far the most stunning, where the SWAT team is already present. Above the vehicle, you can see a string of four windows that have not been damaged yet. Although during the presumptive shooting, the second from the left especially would be shot out. You have the flag at full mast. You have crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed. And beneath the flag was Wayne Carver, medical examiner, awaiting the arrival of his portable tent. In slide number 26, you have a close-up view where it's more easy to see Wayne Carver is there, because he would be the key official from the state of Connecticut who would make the whole story hang together, even though there were many gaps and gaffes in his press conference that raised suspicions from, for example, the extremely capable journalism professor at Florida Atlantic University, James Tracy, who published a brilliant article raising questions about Sandy Hook because of the dismal performance of Wayne Carver, which was the first serious scholarly article about Sandy Hook. In the next slide, number 27, you can see the windows undamaged at the top left. You can see the windows after they're damaged on the top right. On the lower left, you can see the perps actually drilling the holes in the window frame that were intended to simulate gunshots. And in the lower right, you can see when they introduce pink rods to simulate the trajectories that are all perfectly parallel. They're all 90 degrees to the window, and from the inside shooter's location, they're all uniformly 55 degrees in relation to the shooter's angle to the window. This is completely contrived, and in some of the photographs, you can see where the aluminum peels out into the classroom, which, of course, is precisely the opposite had this been a bona fide shooting. This is as important evidence as you could have in a case like this, that it was elaborately staged. But there is a development here, as seen in slide number 29, namely, we have been able to find a new printer and a new distributor, and the book has now been made available at moonrockbooks.com, where, look at the cover on the left, Angel, I added a badge to this book. It states, banned by Amazon.com 2015.
Nice. Now, I know that you have 50 slides and you're concerned about time, but we're 30 slides in at 18 minutes, so I think you might have a little bit of time to talk about, to explore this a little bit, because this is really, I think, one of the seminal moments in truth history is your book and what's happened to it and the reaction to it. One of the things that happened was that InfoWars, the most popular alleged truth site in the world, the controlled opposition, Alex Jones, Bill Hicks's new incarnation, they published that photograph that you showed, and there was a big to-do about it, but then it got taken down and removed from Google cache. What, in your considered opinion, what's going on with this controlled? I mean, Jones seems to have done so much good in so many areas. Other people that we know and used to care about seem to have done so much good in so many other areas. Can you comment on either on what's going on or what we can do about this the strange divisiveness? Is everybody a shill but you and me? What's up?
Let's go back to slide number 26 then, so we see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when the article was published on InfoWars, and what could be more thematic with the InfoWars, the idea of information warfare, than a book that blows apart the basis for the Obama administration's gun control agenda than this should, and that it should be banned, where they obtained an even better version of this photograph, which they published in the article at the top. But stunningly, Angel, it had a photo credit to the Connecticut State Police, which meant that it was in and of itself definitive evidence that the Connecticut State Police were aware that a scam was taking place and that they were principal players in the scam. Because as you see, again, I reiterate, those four windows are undamaged, whereas we know now, and we can move back to slide number 28, it's seriously damaged when we look after the shooting, but it's all been staged. So this is a fascinating development. The article appears to have been up for 38 minutes. It already had 178 comments, Angel, and then it was taken down. In fact, they were so stunned by this development that they had a better version they were attributing to the Connecticut State Police. They've even purged it from the internet cache, so you can't even find it using the Wayback Machine today. However, fortunately, it had already been captured and retained, and I published the article in one of my blogs.
What's going on? What's their agenda? I mean, for heaven's sake, is it really true that Alex Jones is like, you know, just complete controlled opposition and has some big agenda? Is he halfway there? Gordon Duff, I mean, it seems like Veterans Today had some good stuff, but then you got too close to certain things. What, for heaven's sake, something's going on, and if we can't figure it out, Jim, who can?
Well, Angel, those are very good questions that ought to be addressed to Alex Jones and to Gordon Duff, it seems to me.
Come on, my show, either one of you.
I'm no mind reader. I can only tell you based upon their behavior that Alex Jones doesn't want to talk about Israeli complicity in 9/11. Gordon Duff did not want to talk about Jade Helm, which I thought was extraordinary because it was causing so much concern within the community in general. And yet, after he had chastised a contributor to Veterans Today for publishing on Jade Helm, declaring it was an ordinary training drill, I published an article explaining why it was obvious it was not an ordinary training drill. And the following day, Gordon Duff took me out of Veterans Today. Very disturbing, in my opinion.
Veterans Day,
Gordon does a lot of good work, but I'm afraid that the classic mix of accurate information to false information by professionals that disinformation is 80 to 20. In other words, they give you 80% good stuff and 20% bad mixed in with it.
Wow.
And without being definitive about it, I think you could apply those measures to Alex Jones and to Gordon Duff alike.
Okay, well, I don't pay attention to Alex Jones, but since I was working with you when the kerfuffle at Veterans Today happened, I have paid close attention to Veterans Today. And what I believe I have seen is the Jade Helm was a cover for him burying your information about these false flags, because he doesn't talk about them anymore except an occasional, very quick article by Kevin Barrett, which then just gets buried in his stuff. It's not, and the headline is sort of skewed, but see, Alex Jones is not mentioning Israeli complicity in 9/11, but that's all that Gordon Duff talks about. So I'm just at a loss to try and figure out what is going on.
It was shocking to me when he not only took me off of Veterans Today, but subsequently deleted all 150 articles I'd published for Veterans Today beginning in 2011.
Yes.
When he first invited me to join as a journalist. And, you know, it caused such consternation. They took a tremendous hit to their readership that about 6 weeks later, the editorial board voted to have them restored. And Gordon, it appears, thwarted that by having little software robots defeat making copies of any of the articles. When I complained to the general manager, that ceased, and I've finally been able to regain access to the articles, where I've moved 70 of the 150 already to jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. You can find the most of them on three consecutive days, October 28th, October 29th, and October 30th. Now, if we return to these increasing false flag, look at slide number 30. We have the Paris terrorist attack of the 13th of November. And it's very difficult for Americans to wrap their minds around the possibility that these fake attacks are occurring abroad as well as at home. But where slide number 31 reflects how artificial it is, if you look at the pattern of what's supposed to be blood, and if it's real blood, I suspect it's animal blood that has been mopped on the floor. Look, it's in either the shape of a heart or the shape of a figure eight. Yeah. These don't appear to be real bodies. Notice none of those bodies is actually exuding any blood itself.
Yeah.
But that would necessarily be the case if they'd actually been shot. And if you look at
Jim, hold on, because I do have to say my fun little piece about this one. Because if you look on the stage, all of the musicians' equipment has been broken down. When you look at the interviews of the band that was allegedly there, they talk about having run for their lives in the middle of everything. So it means that if you've ever seen a drum set broken down, ladies and gentlemen, it's a long and involved process. Don't ever take up the drums. But somehow he had to take down his drum set and remove his equipment while all those poor people were lying there dead on the floor.
Angel, that's a brilliant observation. I appreciate that tremendously. Yeah. Just look at those bodies. You see any blood exuding from any of those bodies?
Yeah.
No, you don't. These appear to be dummies that were staged and arranged. And even more telling is the fact that we had a tweet about the Paris attack 2 days before the event, and Wikipedia published an elaborate article about the Paris terrorist attacks in advance that had as many as 20 different references. One of the classic blunders akin to James Standley of the BBC reporting the destruction, the collapse of Building 7, 23 minutes before it actually happened on 9/11, from which the BBC has never recovered. And then as slide number 33 reflects, it turns out that there was a drill taking place at the same time, and yet another report about the head of the CIA meeting with the head of French intelligence in advance of the event, no doubt to coordinate, where we finally, as slide number 34 reflects, had ISIS claiming responsibility for the Paris attacks as revenge for Syrian airstrikes and for insulting Islam's prophet. But the Syrian airstrikes were not being conducted by the French. They were being conducted by the Russians. And the fact is, we already have discovered that ISIS was created by the United States. So the levels of deceit and deception here, Angel, are simply staggering.
They really are. And France, or Paris at least, has been under martial law. The suspension of all of the civil liberties that everyone warns us are going to be suspended here in the United States, or that somebody wants to be suspended here in the United States. Boy, you hear so many different ideas about, and you said you're not a mind reader. Of course not. You're an evidence-based person. I appreciate that. But somehow we've got to get into the, not just the heads of the people that are doing this and the heads of the people that are subjected to this, and see what we can come up with to find the solutions. Or, in fact, we are going to have the same another false flag attack that's large enough and crazy enough for them to do the imposition of martial law here in the United States.
Well, I do think that they're working up toward that, Kevin, and the latest effort here is shown by slide number 35, namely the San Bernardino shooting, which we have, of course, also covered before on this very program.
Yeah.
But look at slide number 36. You know, the official report in the New York Times about the shooting, a couple is supposed to have killed 14 people, left 21 wounded, thousands of rounds of ammunition. Obama or officials were reluctant to describe it as a terrorist attack. Look at the vehicle. It turns out this appears to be a police vehicle. There are a lot of holes in the windshield, but there are no holes in the chassis. Not even the tires are shot out. They claim there was a running gun battle with the terrorists, but the window was rolled up. You can't have a running gun battle if the windows of your vehicle are rolled up. And when the purported bodies were taken out of the vehicle, they were handcuffed.
Yeah.
How could terrorists have been conducting a running battle if they were handcuffed? And indeed, it turns out when you zoom in on the bodies that the face has been photoshopped and appears, in fact, to be another dummy, a new kind of dummy that can display gore. And if we look at slide number 37, I mean, how much more indication of fraud could we have here than the Craigslist advertisement?
There it is.
Where extras needed with good pay, need 30 people, 21 to 70, to do background work on Wednesday, December 2nd. Call in 6 a.m. Tuesday, December 1st for the Wednesday shoot. Location in Highland, California in San Bernardino. Casual dress, plain clothes, office attire, food provided, and busing. You got to sign a waiver that you won't talk about it under penalty of perjury. And then we find in slide number 38 that the Obama administration is maintaining that the terrorist attacks will subside when we pass more gun control laws. Honest Angel, this is the most loopy claim I've ever heard from the office of the White House. This is completely absurd to suppose that if you pass more gun laws, terrorist attacks are going to subside. If there were a causal relationship there, it would only be because they've been putting on all these fake terrorist attacks in order to bring about gun control, so that once they achieve their objective, they'll no longer have to stage so many fake attacks.
I know you're not a mind reader. I know you're an evidence-based professor of learning. But what do you, and all of you have looked at, what's the end game? Do they want our guns for why? So that the banksters can continue fiat currency once people wake up, so they can shut down the internet, so they can enslave people and take our vital fluids? I mean, what's going on?
Angel, this is typical of a scenario where you don't possess the information they possess. They may know, for example, the economy is going to collapse because of mismanagement by Congress and the president. They don't want the American people to be the position to take out their anger on the Congress and the president by shooting them up. They don't want the American people to be capable of standing up for themselves when they betray the country. I think that the problem with your hypothesis is they know the game they're playing, and we simply have to do the best we can to sort it out. The point of the matter is there's no scenario under which taking guns away from the American people is beneficial. Indeed, one of the reasons I believe they suppressed Nobody Died at Sandy Hook is because I included as an appendix a study showing that when guns are banned, crime goes up. In other words, all we've been told by the Obama administration turns out to be false. It's even the case, Angel, that there's been a reduction in violent crimes in the United States over the past decade and a half.
What do you say to their argument that in Scotland, only 20% of the cops carry weapons and everything's all peachy dandy in those countries that don't have weapons? What's your response to that?
You got to look at the evidence. I even published a study in the book. Now, they're going to be selective and try to pick a case that makes their case, but that's called special pleading. It's like a used car salesman trying to convince you that the car's got a great stereo, it's got a wonderful upholstery, and ignoring the fact that it needs a ring job and the engine is shot. Yeah. It's typical kind of propaganda we find from used car salesmen, editorial writers, and politicians. Now, if we go further,
one more thing. There also is the case that in all these other countries, Australia, England, wherever the cops only carry billy clubs or whatever, they are not the most powerful country in the world. They are not the United States of America. They are not the one with the greatest resources and the best military might and a hidden shadow government operating, you know, advanced
Angel,
technology.
Angel, if you look deeper into the evidence, it appears that crime goes up everywhere they ban guns.
Everywhere.
So, you know, this is not
really
a superficial phenomenon.
Okay.
Now, if we look at slide number 39, you mentioned, you know, divisions within the community. One of the most sensational developments in relation to 9/11 research has been the emergence of a woman by the name of Rebecca Roth, who has a book entitled Methodical Illusion, in which she accounts for what happened to the planes and the passengers, so that there's an explanation for all those phone calls that we know cannot have been made from planes, because air phones won't work at speeds above 200 miles an hour, altitudes above 2,000, and where A.K. Dewdney, a professor of computer science at Western Ontario, and David Ray Griffin, the dean of 9/11 studies, have both demonstrated all those phone calls were fabricated or faked. Well, Rebecca offers a story that, in my judgment, is intended to weave a narrative around the data points we have about the, all four of the alleged crash sites having been fabricated or faked in different ways to bring back the planes, even though we have Bureau of Transportation statistics records showing that Flight 11, North Tower, and 77, the Pentagon, were not even in the air that day. We have FAA registration records showing that Flight 93, Shanksville, and 175, South Tower, those planes used for those flights were not even deregistered or taken formally out of service until 28 September 2005. So how can planes that were not even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? If you look at the next...
Are you saying there were never any crews or people to have gotten rid of, that no, that there weren't any planes at all? So her story about them being in a hangar somewhere instead of, you know, in the air because of the things they said to her is complete. Nobody died on planes, is what you think?
Nobody died on planes, Angel. None of the planes crashed. And Pilots for 9/11 Truth, by virtue of a study of air ground communications, was able to establish that Flight 93, for example, was over Champaign, Urbana, Illinois after it had purportedly crashed in Shanksville. And the Flight 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania long after it had purportedly hit the South Tower. It's all a sham.
So the death lists of the planes, they weren't real. There were no planes at all for there to even be passengers that were telling a phony story.
Angel, you're not listening to me. Flights 93 and 175 were real planes that were really in the air, but they did not crash in Shanksville. They did not hit the South Tower. Pilots have demonstrated that the Shanksville plane was over Champaign, Illinois, Urbana, Illinois, after it had allegedly crashed in Shanksville. That 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had officially hit the South Tower. And with the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, own registration records, which I obtained, show that those two planes, the planes used for those flights, were not deregistered or formally taken out of service until 28 September 2005, 4 years later.
Well, you and I have been in this movement for a long time, and what about the, she really did those pictures of the art students and the floor 93 work and the balcony and the helicopter and all that. I mean, that was really new to me. Did she really come up with that, or?
Angel, let me proceed, and then
okay.
We can talk about
Sounds
it.
Good.
If we look at slide number 40, it turns out that Rebecca Roth bears an uncanny resemblance to Monica, Monica, who is on a show called The Fix Your Health Teams with a fellow named Michael, where she was promoting a wonder salve called Immortelle, reportedly capable of solving 17 different kinds of ailments from autism to spinal injury. She has the same voice as Monica, the same verbal inflections, the same coquettish manner in speech, the same laugh. If you look at number 41, when you take Monica and put Rebecca's wig and glasses on, then we have a stunning resemblance to Rebecca, who has denied being Monica to the current radio network that carries her show.
Nice.
But where, as we see in frame number 42, Rebecca is now going after the 9/11 truthers who have exposed that she's not a flight attendant. She's making a statement to look out for anyone who attacks her and flag their website, because three flags have closed your YouTube account. The man speaking on the video sounds very similar to the man on her health that Fix Your Health, misspelled here. The video is a comment from 2 hours ago. Rebecca Roth, thanks, Scott. These trolls are really showing themselves to be working for the enemy of American freedom. Please email me any names you come up with, and if you see their BS videos, flag them as creating violence or bullying. But that's not what these studies are done. They're simply exposing that she's a phony and a shill, that she's been lying to us. And if you can see it here, very revealing, at the back of her book, Methodical Illusion. I'll read it to you.
Okay.
A special thanks to my husband for his patience and understanding through my numerous hours of research, and for knowing how important this book was for me to both research and to write, and to the Fix Your Health team with doTERRA for your products to keep me creative, healthy, and uplifting. It even appears it even appears that the Michael on her health show is the same person called Ramjet on her news show. They have the same manner, the same appearance, and the same voice. I now believe that Rebecca and Michael are not merely friends and associates and colleagues, but actually married.
Wow. Wow. Okay. What about her new, that evidence? Had you ever seen that before? The art student pictures and the floor 93 and all that? That was
There's a lot about what she does that I like. In fact, I showed before, if we can go back to slide number 39, I published an initial article about her on the 21st of September on my blog, Rebecca Roth's Methodical Illusion Pros and Cons. Then on the 5th of November, a second, that Rebecca's Methodical Illusion may be Rebecca herself. Then on the 20th of November, Alan Powell from Australia wrote a fiction, writing fiction about a fiction. And on December 10th, we did an hour show exposing Rebecca, playing the audio tapes that show it's the same woman with the same voice and so forth. Rebecca Roth Exposed, which you can find on YouTube, has created a sensation. And since then, I've done more on Rebecca, including a two-hour program with Scott Bennett and Michael Jay and Alan Powell on Truth Unite, which is Carrie Cassidy's channel. So you want to find Truth Unite about Rebecca Roth. It's the most thoroughgoing and detailed critique of who she is and what she's doing. Now, what's good about Rebecca Angel is she talks about Israeli complicity. She talks about the Gelatin Group, which were a small number of some 200 Mossad agents that came into the United States on the pretext of being art students. The Gelatin Group deserves a great deal more attention. They were conducting performance art on the outside of the Twin Towers. I believe it was they who set up for the creation of the cutouts that were supposed to be the effects of real planes hitting the building when no real planes hit the building. But they created the cutouts using what I believe was probably even thermite, possibly even nanothermite, which is non-explosive, but generates extremely high temperatures. It has a dazzling capability of melting steel. So I believe that's how they were created. But in the process, she is ignoring the fact that there was a complete stand down by the American Department of Defense. That there were some 47 drills, as Webster Tarpley has exposed. So she's trying to divert all the attention to Israel. I think it's commendable. There's a website out there entitled Israel Did 9/11, All the Proof in the World Every Serious Student of 9/11 Needs to Review, because Israeli complicity was overwhelming and comprehensive. But it was brought to us jointly by the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. And what Monica does, what Rebecca does, is obfuscate all of that and restores the planes and passengers in order to create some greater semblance of plausibility to the official account.
Let's keep going. Thank you.
A quite startling development has just occurred, as in slide 43 reflects. I mentioned James Tracy.
No.
The first serious scholar to author an article in that case about Wayne Carver and his bizarre press conference. He's been given a notice of termination by Florida Atlantic University. If you see the next slide, number 44, the Daily News even published prematurely that he's been fired for harassing parents of Sandy Hook. This is by Lenny Posner and his wife, Veronique. It's a completely shocking and wrong and a major article.
When did this happen? Yesterday?
Yes. This is a major development.
Christ.
He's actually been given a two-week notification of termination. A Jewish publication in Florida named Forward published an article, an attack by Lenny Posner on James Tracy. I submitted a rebuttal to Forward as follows. Let me read it.
Yes.
Are you all gullible saps? Are you knowingly accessories after the fact to the monumental scam known as Sandy Hook? Are you unaware that Lenny Posner gave a copy of Noah's death certificate to Kelly Watt, which turned out to be a fabrication, and that Noah died twice, once at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012, then again in Pakistan on 16 December 2014, or that Lenny Posner has made it his life's work to undermine the mountain of proof that Sandy Hook was an elaborate hoax because he and his wife have pocketed well over $1 million in donations from sympathetic Americans who have given him money? Nobody died at Sandy Hook 2015, which has 13 contributors, including six PhD, current or retired college professors, provides 425 pages of proof that the school had been closed by 2008. It was a two-day FEMA drill with a rehearsal on the 13th, going live on the 14th. We even have the manual, which I made an appendix to the book. Paul Preston, an LA school safety expert, was so disturbed by what he saw on television that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, who confirmed that it had been a drill, that no one had died, and that it was done to promote gun control. When the book was banned, I released it to the public for free as a PDF. It has had millions of downloads. I am stunned that forward should be so backward as to be ignorant of the sensation this has caused. We're banning books by Amazon.com is comparable to burning books by the Nazis. Something needs to be done to stop the lies and deceit and deception by monstrous liars like Noah and Veronique Posner, who are playing you for saps, using the name Noah in lieu of Lenny. I was astonished when this initially appeared, and they immediately took it down, claimed it would be waiting for approval, but then suppressed it. So I published the following when I discovered what had happened. So forward will publish lies by a Jew, Lenny Posner, but suppress a response that exposes them from a non-Jew, Jim Fetzer, even though he, meaning me, is attacked in the article you published. I have never before taken seriously the Talmudic dictum that Jews are allowed to lie to Goyim, but that would appear to be the policy of forward. Count me as a disillusioned Goyim who is not going to place any faith in a Jewish publication in the future. This journal is propaganda.
Holy cow.
Oh, wow.
Holy cow.
Something else.
Let's finish up, so we have a few more minutes. Yeah. Let's finish your slides, and then we can talk. We'll finish our minutes.
All right, here we have just a few more slides about 2015 in retrospect, as slide 47 shows. Kurt Russell has picked up the issue about gun control and taken on a reporter who turns out to be brainwashed in favor of gun control. As you see in the next slide, number 49, the reporter whose name is Wells, what's he going to do? I guess he's going to beg to have his guns taken away so he can be even more helpless against shooters and terrorists. Then when one shows up, he'll run and go hide in a closet and cower in fear, waiting for the government authorities to come save him, like the DHS active shooter guide suggests. Wells tries to counter by mumbling something about, but the San Bernardino shooters. But just come on, what a big fat bag of logic fail. The San Bernardino guns were purchased legally, and the shooting itself happened where? That's right, in yet another gun-free zone. None of the gun control executive orders Obama is about to pass without congressional approval would have stopped what happened. And is in fact, as you are well aware, Angel, he signed executive orders just a month and 2 days after Sandy Hook, 23 of them by actual count. Banning people on the no-fly list from being able to purchase guns implies, A, terrorists actually wait to jump through legal loopholes to purchase firearms before committing acts of terror, and B, that the list is even accurate considering it's been reported that there are even 18-month-old babies on there. But hey, if there's any silver lining to the fact that the Second Amendment is under further attack, at least then the 72 Department of Homeland Security employees on the terrorism watch list won't be able to get their hands on a gun either. And if you look at the final slide, number 50, what Kurt Russell has observed is that anyone who believes that the terrorist attacks will stop when we pass more gun control laws is literally insane. And I agree with him 100%. I use this last slide to sum up the year we have been living through because it's explaining why stage shootings. The government resorts to stage shootings and crisis actors. It's to keep better control of the story. After 9/11, real people died. Four wives of husbands who had been killed on 9/11, known as the Jersey Girls, exerted pressure on the Bush-Cheney administration, forced them to appoint a 9/11 commission, which they resisted doing for 441 days. When they went to testify themselves, they insisted it not be under oath, that no notes be taken, and that they be allowed to testify together. You would have thought you were interrogating a couple of mafia dons. The government has found they can control the story better if they use actors who are paid. They can control the message, and they don't have danglers such as the relatives of dead people who are pursuing all kinds of issues that the government cannot control. It's a sad story, but that's the message of the year we've just been living through, 2015.
The documentary about the Jersey Girls is called Press for Truth. There's another great documentary out lately called Incontrovertible, aimed at firefighters, policemen, and soldiers. If you haven't seen It's Time to Talk About Sandy Hook or any of Sophia Smallstorm's work, the evidence is complete out there. You've mentioned a few names, and since we are so surrounded by these, I could talk to you for hours, Jim, about so many things. Since we're so surrounded by people that are only partially telling us the truth. You mentioned Alan Powell, Scott Bennett, and was it Michael Jay?
Yes.
Alan Powell, Scott Bennett, Michael Jay, who else would you recommend that we pay attention to and that you personally trust as we go forward in 2016? Anyone else?
Oh, Angel, that's a tough call. You know, it's not like there's a superabundance out there. I do recommend Sophia Smallstorm. I think she's simply excellent. I do recommend Wolfgang Halbig. I do recommend others in the 9/11 movement. I highly recommend James Tracy.
Oh, God.
Although he's being pilloried,
that
he has shown great courage and integrity, and for that he has been savaged. So get the irony. Here you have Rebecca Roth being lionized, even though she's marketing lies on a large scale, and James Tracy, who has been speaking the truth, is being condemned and punished. It's an outrage and injustice, and reveals the Orwellian world we're living in which the false is true, black is white, and there's no justice at all for those who are doing the best to bring it to the American people.
Dr. James Tracy of memoryholeblog.com, I cannot even tell you how distressing that news is to me. I have been following his website for a long time, and the concept that Tenure would be destroyed and the academic thinkers could be subjected to the whims of these monsters. I'm sorry, those of you who are out there that are a part of this giant scam on the American people, unfortunately you are caught up in a horrible system, and you do not want to continue. This is a Frankenstein monster, and it will turn on its creator. That is absolutely assured. Dr. James Fetzer, as always, I am so grateful that you are there. You're somebody that I do trust, who is of integrity. There have been some other developments today that you didn't want to talk about. I look forward to talking with them. And you've invited me on your show, The Real Deal, with James Fetzer. Don't miss it. JamesFetzer.blogspot.com and James Tracy's memoryholeblog.com. And we have Alan Powell, Scott Bennett. Stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, 2016 is going to be a really interesting year, and we'll be there to watch it with you.
Special thanks to you, Angel, and to Don, too. I think his shows are making a difference. I'm very glad to be here.
We are very honored to have you be on them. I'm honored to be here.
Okay, and we'll close with our little theme song here. Okay.
Yeah. I was out when you said 353, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. You meant 9 minutes, but you said eight in case I went over, right?
Yeah,
you forget
that. We can
that.
Do
I'm
it.
I'm on time.
Yes, we can.
They like our banner, remember that?
We can
with
change
color,
things throughout the land. But we all must lend a hand.
It's going. Yeah.
We can do it.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you, everybody. Stay tuned.
Oh, your neighbor.
It's been quite a year here, folks. And so
A bit bewildered. Hopefully we'll have a better year and things will be looking up as we take control, as we get the word out here. Thank you so much.
Know what to do. Join together and then there'll be two. There are others all around, scattered throughout the town. Reach out and you will see your numbers swell to three. We can do it. Yes, we can. We can change things throughout the